Good afternoon, and welcome to Radnor Meetings Emerge Values podcast. Today we have Liz Robinson, who is the Executive Director of the Philadelphia Solar Energy Association. And prior to that, she had directed the Energy Coordinating Agency for more than 30 years. And prior to that, she had co-founded and directed the Keystone Energy Efficiency Alliance. I think that Liz brings an enormous amount of intelligence and spirit to how to direct our energies in relation to climate change and how to take action. So, hello, Liz.
Hey Bert, how are you?
This is a wonderful day. It's really beautiful. It's a sunshiny
Okay.
day. And so could you tell us about some of the things that had led you to take the actions that you have and how you, in your spirit, found the truth in the best way for you to act in this situation?
Sure. I was thinking about this in preparation for this call, and
Go
I
ahead,
think
sorry.
I have always, even as a child, been very concerned about peace. My dad served in the American Air Force and spent time in World War II and was shot down over Romania during the Ploiesti raids and was in prison camp for the duration of the war. And when he got out of prison camp, of course, and the war was over, I was born in Germany after the war. As a young child, I spent quite a bit of time in Europe, and I was always very aware and interested in other cultures and how cultures could get along, how people could get along, and how Europe would. I was aware that Europe needed to heal after the war. So I grew up in that environment, and I think that caused me to have a very strong interest in world peace as a child. I grew up in that kind of thinking about these things, very abstractly, of course, as a kid. But the way that that manifested for me was just the interest in other cultures and the ability to communicate well and fully with other people who were not like me. I grew up, moving around, I was exposed to a lot of different cultures. I spent a lot of my youth in the South also. Air Force brats tend to live in the South as well as Europe. And so I grew up in cultures that were very, very different from one another, but always, was able to appreciate the inherent integrity of that culture and what I could learn from different cultures.
Sounds like you had a strong sense of community, not just within a narrowly defined group, but something that would reach out to other cultures and still have a sense of empathy that would make you realize the values of their community also.
Yeah, and I frankly was extremely lucky. I come from a very strong family and had a very, very durable family and, frankly, a large extended family. So, and within that family there are sharp differences of opinion. And people like to argue about politics and they like to discuss politics and they like to challenge each other. There was a lot of openness and discussion of political issues. And I grew up expecting that environment. I mean, that was very comfortable to me and very normal. So people having different opinions, but being able and willing to, with humor. Humor was a huge part of making, just creating bonds despite these slightly, these differences. But the
It
difference
sounds
is,
like it was a good starting point
yeah.
for your ability to work with others
Yes.
of the same opinion and those that have different opinions and
Yes.
how to bring them around. As one of the things I know that you are well known for is
Yeah.
working with the Pennsylvania legislature and
Right.
other groups, that there are some people there who hold some strong opinions that are not necessarily in agreement with yours.
Right. And I'll also say, the birth order probably played a role. I'm the only girl and I have two older brothers. And my role in the family was a peacemaker. So my brothers were, constantly colliding. And, one of my roles was to seek peace, and figure out ways for them to stop fighting or to, navigate around whatever the conflict was. So I think I just kind of grew up with these challenges and enjoyed figuring out how to solve them. So I would say that my overarching, what I am and who I am is a problem solver. And I have the ability to see problems pretty clearly and in very interested in large scale solutions that create harmony and peace among people and with the planet. And the other thing, I always wonder about this. My dad, his family side was 1/16th Native American. So at least that's the family lore. It's hard to prove these things, but that's the family lore. And so I suppose I'm 1/32nd Native American. And my father had a very, very deep spiritual connection to the land and to water and all things natural. And it was really, I learned that from him, I believe. And my mother too, but my dad's connection was more spiritual than my mother loved nature, of course, but my dad has very, very deep spiritual tie. And I also have that. And I think that it has been also another influence in my life. So I draw a great deal of strength from the natural world, and that kind of propels me. So I think those are the kind of formative things that have really shaped me. So in my work, my kind of professional work, I started off in really with a very strong desire to create greater equity among people. So my initial focus was human service and social service. And so I started off in education, working with kids who were really sharply disadvantaged, and then moved. I wasn't very good at teaching little kids, so I moved into more of administrative roles and what I would call community development and organizing, and I'm much better at those things. So that led me over the years. Crisis in Philadelphia, interestingly enough, that led to the creation of the Energy Coordinating Agency, is similar to where we are now, really, where energy prices rose very sharply. And at the same time that we have energy prices rising very sharply, back in the 1980s, we had public policy doing very stupid stuff. I mean, incredibly stupid stuff. And I won't go into that, but what I saw here was that, we had this big structural problem where low-income people couldn't pay their bills, and the folks who needed to be solving the problem were doing stupid stuff and making things worse. So there was a tremendous need just to solve this problem. And I was able to bring a lot of people together over the course of a year. It took us a year to do this, but I was able to bring the religious community together and the political folk who had the political power together with the what I would call the advocacy community, the community development folks. And we created the Energy Coordinating Agency, which is a nonprofit corporation designed to coordinate all of the low-income energy services in Philadelphia and deliver those through neighborhood energy centers. And now there are 16 of them. We started with five, and now there are 16. ECA grew very rapidly from I was the first person hired, and it grew at its peak. I think we were about 160 people. And
Wow.
yeah. So
So
it's a
it
very
seems like,
durable.
yeah, I was going to say, it seems that you had a entry level of working with people to solve problems that would serve all of those who are engaged in this issue at a very on the ground level as a smarter view of values at the personal level and then scale up the effort to a larger organization, knowing that at that the problems you're trying to solve affected those back on the ground, those where it had started, that this is the way to accomplish the changes that you saw were needed.
Yes, and education, low-income people, one of the things I love about energy is that energy is something you can control. There are a lot of ways, as you know from your work in energy. Energy is something that you, an individual person, you can control it through energy efficiency and access to renewable energy. This is a solvable problem. And yet in our human society, particularly in the United States, we have not chosen that path. We've chosen this other path, which is the monopoly structure with a large utility controlling everything. That is, frankly, I think, anathema to human well-being over the long term. And I think that we have to move to a much more democratic structure with energy. So energy democracy is something that I'm very, very interested in, and that simply means getting energy in a form that is accessible to every person and every community, and creating community by providing understanding, helping people really understand energy better, and then control energy for their own purposes. And doing that in a way that is harmonious with the earth and harmonious with the natural world, and also with human beings and all critters. So that's the kind of vision that I'm very interested in working toward. And I believe that creates stability among human beings, peace among
Yes.
human beings, is entirely consistent with Quaker values. Quaker values of simplicity, integrity, peace. These really cannot be reached without solving very tangible problems that we have. And energy is integral, the underlying everything. So it's just key that we build in. Energy democracy is critically important.
It's interesting that we're now talking in April 2026,
Yes.
and these are extremely unstable times
Yes.
with war in Iran that is basically about energy
Yeah.
and the monopolistic corporations that are looking to control all of the energy. And we have an energy form at our doorstep with
Yes.
renewable energies that would democratize
Exactly.
the sources for the energy that we use. It needs work in the transition to this democratic form of energy, but that's one of the things that has not been discussed as much. It seems that this control of energy is kind of pushed to the side because for so long, probably, I guess, since we had coal mines and the ownership of coal mines basically put their property as a commodity that would be sold out there. And it went from the coal mines to the oil fields to the natural gas drillings. And every other form has been a property that was owned and sold. And now we are on the verge of truly democratizing the energy that we use through these renewable energies. And you are working at a hub of it. It must be very exciting times.
It is very exciting. It's very, very exciting. I think we're going to see some really rapid change coming very quickly because the over-reliance on fossil fuels is breaking. That it is clearly breaking, and the current administration has accelerated the breakdown of the old structure by insisting that we should all be slaves to fossil fuel. Frankly, Americans don't like to be slaves.
No.
We've never been good at slavery. So, yeah, it is a very important, very exciting time. So, while I was at ECA, I was always involved in policy from the very beginning. So, public policy has always been part of my work. I've been very interested in policy at all levels, so local, at the city level, at the state level and at the federal level, certainly internationally also. And the thing about climate change and addressing climate change is that you have to integrate policy at every level. So solving climate change now is imperative to do it really quickly. One of the things I'm increasingly aware of is the need to accelerate the pace of change and to push as fast as we can to create the world we need. And everyone needs to push. So I'm very interested in educating and organizing friends, Quakers, and everyone really to help with the pushing. And what I find is that friends are extremely well educated on the subject already. Quakers, whenever I speak, to groups of people that I don't know, I'm always delighted to see the level of understanding that people already have. What they don't have, generally speaking, is the knowledge about the specific path they need to take to take action. And that's perfectly understandable. Very few people spend as much time as I do on the details of what is going on, what exactly, which bills are exactly, what all those, zillions of details. So one of the kind of voids, I guess, that I'm trying to fill now is frankly with the Quaker Action Mid-Atlantic region and the Eco Justice Collaborative. We're really working together across multiple states now to increase the ease of action. I'll just say that, to make it easier for people to take action by giving them more accurate information, more timely information, and doing more very simple trainings, like basic trainings. That is really, I think, what has been missing is people understand the problem, but they don't know exactly what the right solution is. And so they haven't been able to take as much action as they would like to take. So it's really trying to make that information really accessible in a very simple form and helping people move forward with it. And right now in Pennsylvania, there's tremendous opportunity because we finally have conditions in Harrisburg are changing. So the legislature is changing, and we do have a Democratic majority in the House. We might be able to flip the Senate and see a Democratic majority in the Senate. That is a game changer. And one of the things I think we all need to be ready for is that that's a very real possibility. And when and if that happens, much more is going to be possible. So in order to take advantage of that, you have to kind of think through, okay, what are all the policies that we need to queue up, essentially, and how do we get them all in position to roll quickly? We have, frankly, in America, we've just been doing really bad policy for so long. So you could say, frankly, that we don't really have an energy policy. We certainly don't have a coherent energy policy. We take one step forward and one step back and two steps forward and three steps back. It was just this herky-jerky kind of thing that we've been doing forever, which is very, very damaging. But despite that, a lot of progress is being made. So it's very important that herky-jerky period come to an end.
Yeah, one of the things is where you talk about that's important that we are all pushing. And the part that is to that is that we're all pushing in the same direction. Because one of the things where you're talking about the herky-jerky movement that is going on and the one step this way, two steps that way, is the waters have been muddied. And that is part of what the let's just call them big oil, fossil fuels have done is when the facts are not on their side, when the benefits to everybody is not on their side, muddying the waters, putting out facts that are questionable, attacking those that are and everybody could and should understand are on their side and against fossil fuels, and how to act. This is an important part of what you do. By basically informing everyone when basically the media is lukewarm on many things and only talks of the problems rather than a coherent solution that would benefit the larger community. So you basically are up against a lot of misinformation, and clarifying that seems to be an important part of what you do.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that the fact that media focuses on conflict, it's simple, it's kind of similar to social media algorithms. They get boosted when they're handling conflict, and media does kind of the same. So we do hear a lot of the negative. We hear a lot of the problems, but we're not presented with solutions. And I think for people who don't have the time that I have to really figure out what is accurate, what is the truth, and what are the right solutions, it's really incumbent upon people like me to make that clearer and to make a much more accessible path forward. What I find is that people really do want to take action. There are some folks who are a little timid, but everybody that I talk to, all friends that I talk to, want to take action. They want to do more than they're currently doing. And they are always asking, what should I do? How do I do it? What do I do? And then also, frankly, I've done a whole lot of lobbying. I'll call it lobbying in my day, talking to legislators and policymakers and making the case. And that is something that is easy to learn. It's really easy to learn how to do that. And it's fun. It's really fun to have conversations with legislators and policymakers because a lot of them are in the same boat. They want to do something, they want to take action, but they get bombarded by the fossil fuel industry. So it's important to really engage many, many more people in the effort to move toward a clean, sustainable energy future that is equitable for everyone. And energy democracy, really frankly, implies that. So, energy efficiency and solar energy. Solar is available almost everywhere on Earth, and harnessing solar energy to support people everywhere is very doable. And that's really what we need to be about, is giving people access to the right tools so that they can create stability and security at an affordable price in their own lives, in harmony, again, in harmony with nature. And all of that is very, very doable. I think that if we can just, break off of these chains of the fossil fuel industry, we'll be, able to really make rapid progress.
Well, yes, I agree. It seems that the renewable sources of energy are so much in favor for the general person, the community, all of that. And yet, in most of your work, as far as I know, has been here in Pennsylvania, and fossil fuel industry is huge here. I mean, the coal industry started way back. And then oil was first discovered somewhere out near Pittsburgh. And now we have the fracking with the natural gas. And naturally, they have a lot of money that they will throw at the general public in the media that they cause to muddy the thinking about it, and also towards the legislators who are thinking in whatever 2 or 4 year cycles that they are thinking that they need to be a war chest of financing to win the next election, especially against the odds of, say, their political opponent, who it might be more and more siding on renewable energy.
There's also a lot of misinformation among decision makers. So, for example, I'll just give the example that's very common, where a decision maker will say, and this is coming from the fossil fuel industry, saying, oh, the sun doesn't shine every day. The sun doesn't shine at night. The wind doesn't blow all day. Wind, blah, blah. So these are unreliable energy sources, and you can't rely on them, and therefore you need gas. So this is a very common line in Harrisburg, in every state capital, I'm sure, that where they can get away with it. But so people don't really understand the value of battery storage. And the notion that you can power the world on the sun plus wind plus batteries. You don't need anything else. The sun, the wind, and batteries. That's it. That's all you need. You need to deploy them in really careful ways so that you always got energy, available. And you also need efficiency. Frankly, you can't afford to waste energy, even though we do have bountiful supplies of renewable energy at the point of use. It needs to be efficiently deployed. And fortunately, the new technologies these days are extraordinary. They're just amazing. The induction stove, the heat pump water heater, these electric vehicles. These technologies are phenomenally efficient, and they're just dynamite. They're really, really good. So we're at this point in history where the technologies have advanced so rapidly, and they're so good, they're so strong, and solar keeps advancing, and wind keeps advancing, and batteries keep advancing. They get cheaper and cheaper, then get better and better. So we're at this amazing moment where we have all the technological solutions available. Everything at an affordable price. Renewable energy is way cheaper than fossil fuel, even without the Iran war and the Strait of Hormuz and all the crazy stuff that's going on at the moment. Renewables are way cheaper. And all we need is everyone to push. We need everyone to push because the future is within our grasp if we can educate people well enough and motivate people to act. And I really believe that Quakers are by our Quakers have a great deal of inherent strength and orientation, kind of grounding and centering, and they also have a very deep level of trust for one another. That is a massive asset. That's a huge asset in this work. And Quakers communicate really well. Not as well as we could, but we do communicate really well together. So there's a tremendous opportunity, I think, for Quakers to become a lot more central to this work. And I'm interested in creating opportunities for that to happen.
Yes, I think another Quaker value that keeps us cognizant of the issues of addressing climate change is simplicity. That basically, if the glut of the fossil fuel energy, just a massive amount of energy that's being pushed, seems to promote a lifestyle of excess. That if we ground ourselves in the value of simplicity and use what we need, that can be supplied with and more. However, the energy that would keep, say, the strip on Las Vegas going 24 hours a day is something that we might need to reconsider. Of course, at our personal level, it's achievable for what our needs are. And the technology is coming up to meet it, as I've heard you speaking about, what is it, porch photovoltaic
Oh,
or
right. Balcony solar.
balcony solar, yes, that will make it more within reach of everyone, including the renters who might not have the capacity to install a large array on the property that they don't own, but would allow them to put enough photovoltaic out there to produce the energy they need to run their household.
Yeah, I love balcony solar for that reason. I think that creating access directly to people to solve their energy needs is exactly what we need to be doing. We don't need to be digging things out of the ground and burning them anymore. That is one of the data points that I saw recently is that already, even though electric vehicles are only about 12% of the private vehicles in the United States, they're already showing that they are improving air quality. And that's tremendous. And to your point about the fossil fuel industry creating excess and waste, there's something, inherent in the simplicity of renewable energy and electricity as compared to other forms of energy, and the internal combustion engine. The comparison between an EV and an internal combustion engine is a great example of that. So we have these roadways full of dirt and grime and grease and, car parts and, ruined this and ruined that. And then roadways that are strewn with plastic and styrofoam. All of these are, fossil fuel products. So getting rid of all of that is really going to make our air cleaner, our roadways cleaner, our lives simpler. We won't have so much junk, I'm simplifying, oversimplifying here, but I'm just trying to make a point that if you really think about all of the negatives that come with the use of fossil fuels, the list is almost endless. And just as you say, simplicity and really simplifying our lives and getting our lives, into a much more stable condition where we don't have all these distractions. And it's a really important, I think. And again, I think friends are really, really already primed to understand all of this at a spiritual level, at a deeper level, and can use that to motivate action.
I agree that it seems that the keys are all there, and it's a matter of implementing, which is a large part of what you do, is seeing where the bills are. And as I was saying before, Pennsylvania is a difficult state with the fossil fuel industries putting an enormous amount to control this state, probably more than any other in this northeast section of the country. That other states are the share of their energy that comes from renewable resources. And so you are waging the mighty struggle here to be able to do that.
Yeah,
And
there are a lot of us. So, and this is just something I wanted to add is that working in coalition with others is so critically important. So just really reaching out and working in coalition with every like-minded person is critically important. And to keep expanding that universe is really fundamental to success. So, and one of the things I've been able to do with Philly Solar is educate children and educate teachers and putting more tools in their hands to really help teachers understand solar and be able to teach solar and electricity to children, even at a really young age. And that's very important, I think. Education really needs to be, we need to understand that this is an ongoing process. Energy can be quite complex, and to get, access to it, really beginning at the level of a middle school student and continuing that through junior high and high school. We need Americans to be a lot more energy literate, and energy literacy is key to really mastering this transition so that people have the tools and the understanding to, again, control their own use of energy, their access to energy. And to do that in a way that is ongoing. So it's just a really fun time to be alive, as they say.
It is a fun time to be alive. And we have challenges that are real challenges that give us energy by engaging with them. I mean, I guess that's one of the ways we know that that's right action, from the kind of energy that we get back when we contemplate where we are with this, where we are going, and the energy that we derive from that. I imagine that that was a big part of the founding of Quaker Action Mid-Atlantic region that you were so important to and are so important to, that it is a source that not just Quakers, but all persons can go to for guidance on how to move these changes forward.
Yeah, I think the more we work at it, the better we're going to be at it, and the, much more rapid progress we can make. So it's again, just in terms of the A lot of people ask me, how do you keep going? How do you, why don't you get discouraged? Why don't you give up? And to be frank, I think it's because I keep solving problems. It's just like there's, making life better for people is really fun. And continuing to do that in new ways is very, it's frankly, it's just very, as you say, energizing. It really feeds me and makes me happy. That's what I get excited about.
Well, that's interesting that for emerge, that the final E represents endurance. How do we find endurance in this struggle to all of the challenges that are facing the large mountain that we're climbing here? And I think that you have it right there, is that the joy, the energy that it gives back, knowing the mission that we're addressing here.
Yeah, you have to be able to take a lot of satisfaction in small steps and small victories. You have to learn patience. Patience is really key to patience and persistence. And I've always been a little bit dogged, I do get quite impatient now and then, but you have to really accept the fact that these are big issues. And you have to just keep at it. So keeping at it.
The virtues, yes, that we often hear patience is a virtue. And I also hold that impatience is a virtue also,
Agreed.
when it's applied the right way, recognized as a source of energy
Yeah, for
towards
sure.
the good.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, we are so grateful that you were able to spend this time with us today, and thank you. And is there anything that you would like to direct our listeners
Yes,
to?
well, join a group or two or three in your orbit and put your shoulder to the wheel. We need you.
And we certainly do. And we're grateful for everybody who is working in the direction that we are. And bring your friends. This is
Absolutely.
important work. Thank you very much,
Thank
Liz.
you. Thank you, Bert.
And we'll see you later.
Alrighty.